News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings 8.07, and good morning to you. It's
Monday,
and it's mild, and it's back to work for a lot of kids, back to school, careful in the school zones, and but at this point, everybody's probably settled back in the classroom, so we're good to go. The big news over the weekend, obviously, was the operation in Venezuela performed by Delta Force, I believe, is the special forces that went in and got Maduro in Venezuela. I mean, that was amazing, unless people were, I don't know. It seems that how we had that level of intelligence and that sort of execution in all about an hour's time, 30 or so of the security killed?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, and I'm trying to find the exact number, but we were talking last week about Maduro's security detail, which was not made of Venezuelans. He had Cubans running his security, and many of them perished during that quick strike. So mm-hmm. many people, they were pointing out how quickly that all went down.
Amazing.
And the Wall Street Journal has some really good information on when all of the different air assets took off and how they all coordinated in the skies and then took out the air defenses there in Caracas, hammered several of the different military installations around the country of Venezuela, and then got into Maduro's fortress. And as he and his wife were allegedly trying to get into a secure safe room, didn't quite get that door closed in time. And Delta Force was able to scoop him up, make off with him, and have him on the Iwo Jima before flying him, I guess, up to Guantanamo and then to New York, where he's scheduled for arraignment today.
Whatever route they took, it was pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time I really was, because I was looking at a lot of things on YouTube, not necessarily the live news feeds that you see on TV, and trying to, get my mind wrapped around what's going on in Venezuela right now, and has for the last, I'd say, 20 years or so. And next thing I know, he's in Brooklyn. I'm like, that was quick. I guess it happened overnight.
I never sleep in. And it seems every time I do sleep in, something crazy happens. Mm-hmm. So I woke up at 9:30 Saturday morning, which for me is incredibly late. I don't know what got into me.
The fact that the kids didn't wake you up.
Yeah, that was the real miracle.
Yes.
Not Operation Absolute Resolve, but my kids didn't wake me up. I guess in bed I had Operation Absolute Resolve because I was sleeping. But to wake up and see that all went down and absolutely incredible. And, of course, all kinds of theories going out around there. It seems like the main gripe from the left, the main gripes from the left, and even some from the right, like Thomas Massie, will never be happy with anything. And he's, he sticks to, I guess, what he believes.
Yep.
But he's one of those who's really not happy that this went down without Congress being informed. But when was the last time Congress, did anything and weren't able to, or were able to get information like that and not leak it out?
Yeah.
They tried.
You can't have an operation like that with any kind of leak at all. It would scuttle the whole thing.
And what's crazy is that they actually were ready to run this scenario a couple
earlier,
times previously.
Yeah, it was going to be like a Merry Christmas thing, wasn't it?
Christmas Day, and then I think they tried once more, maybe New Year's Eve or somewhere around then, before it all went down on Saturday. And this one account that I follow, who is certainly no fan of Trump, but they call themselves open source, intel information. It's called OSINT Defender, OSENT Defender. And from all over the world, Ukraine and Russia's war, they get a lot of great information from there. The Iran strikes, I don't know how they do it, but even in the images from the master control room there where Trump and Rubio and Brennan and they were all watching the attack go down, you could see in the background one screen where they had X, they had Twitter up with Venezuela search just to see if there was any information coming in, because during the Osama bin Laden raid, where they went and grabbed him.
Yep.
That was where that information first started popping up. People in Afghanistan saying, hey, there's a lot of choppers in the sky. What's going on here? So, they were just seeing what was going on. But OSINT Defender was one of those who was on that screen. They say, this person says that Maduro, you know, he may have cut a deal, maybe not, but so many of his Cuban guards were shot down during this operation, and they said some U.S. military were injured, but not killed. Mm-hmm. You had one American chopper who took a shot, but was able to even return back to base. So by all accounts, a majorly successful operation, but many of these Cubans were killed. Now, this OSINT defender said, well, you know, these Cubans were his security, but what they really were making sure he stayed in line with the orders coming down from Havana or Moscow, mm-hmm. and that if Maduro decided to cut a deal or evacuate on his own, that they would not allow that to happen. So that's his theory. But I guess we don't have any Cubans to ask that question anymore who were right around him.
Well, we might. You know, we might soon. Cuba could be...
could be next on the chopping
block.
Could
be a democracy here in a few months. Who knows? The thing that I was reading up about Venezuela is that... mentioned this maybe off the air earlier. It's like at every level there's corruption. It's got to do with mineral rights and things like that. You've got all the law enforcement not trusted by the people, that all the citizens are like, the cops are not, and a lot of them are, in fact, Cuban, too. Mm. And then you've got the judiciary, because the judge let the rigged election go through. Nope, he's in.
Yeah.
And the military is very general heavy, and one of the reasons that there's so many generals in the military is not necessarily do military stuff. They're in on it too. Mm. They're getting a cut on the mineral rights deals.
Yeah.
So you have this a level of people getting rich, or you know, getting a snippet of the corrupt money, and the people themselves, Venezuela, have been suffering for years. Yeah. It's been just spiraled downhill before Maduro and now during Maduro.
Yeah, which, you know, doesn't make sense for a country to be that poor when they're sitting on the oil reserves and the gold reserves they are too, although I understand the oil isn't necessarily as clean and ready for production as clean American oil, but
they haven't invested in it either. They've just gone the cheap way. So a few can make a lot of money, basically.
And it's funny, too, you know, with the Iraq war and all the Middle East stuff. And you even look back at a tweet from Trump back in, I think, 2013, where he said, we left Iraq without the oil. Are you kidding me? You know, and so many people say, you know, that's the whole reason that we went into Iraq was the oil. Well, here you have Trump saying, in part, not completely, because there are certainly other elements to the reason here, whether it's the Monroe or Donroe Doctrine, as he's calling it now. But he's like, yeah, it's about the oil, baby. We're gonna scoop that up and put our companies back on it. So
yeah, and it's about the oil, and that's the thing. You know, Trump being very transparent about it. I know a lot of people were really turned off by his TV presentation the day of. Thought it was a little carnival barking when it was such a
little backslappy.
Such a historic and dramatic, and some would say controversial move. And he didn't seem to have a care about it, but everybody else was in line. They were all speaking off script, on script, I should say, carefully speaking on script, including Rubio. And of course, they flanked out. I guess Rubio had a lot of the time on the different talk shows over the weekend.
They said he's expected to be the next president of Venezuela, Rubio. They're going to give him that job too. But that is the next question: is what happens next?
Yeah,
and so many people wondering if the Nobel Prize winner, Corina Machado, will head back to Venezuela, and whether she would become president. You have this Delcy Rodriguez, the VP, who's in charge now, and Trump says she'll stay in line. She's already promised she would. But I know Rubio was asked about the Nobel Prize winner
exactly.
this weekend.
Yeah. So why didn't you, you know, why are you not dealing with her? And here's what Rubio had to say to Kristen Welker.
Well, a couple things. First of all, Maria Corina Machado is fantastic, and she's someone I've known for a very long time, and she's the whole movement is. But we are dealing with the immediate reality. The immediate reality is that, unfortunately, and sadly, but unfortunately, the vast majority of the opposition is no longer present inside of Venezuela. We have short-term things that have to be addressed right away. We all wish to see a bright future for Venezuela, a transition to democracy. All of these things are great, and we all want to see that. I've worked on that for 15 years on a personal level, both in the Senate and now as National Security Advisor and Secretary of State. These are things I still care about, we still care about. But what we're talking about is what happens over the next two, three months, and how that ties to the national interest of the United States.
So much corruption in Venezuela. You have no choice if you're going to do something down there. Okay. Now, Maduro is, because of the indictment, he's going to be in a Manhattan court later on today. That's amazing to me. But whoever you're going to
deal
with.
Where Mom Donnie's now in charge.
Yeah, true. But the point is that anybody at that level that you're going to be dealing with, they're part of the corruption. So it's a matter of, do they turn? It's like, okay, you've been corrupt. We know it. We get it. We see the playbook. What are you going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
So that, I don't think that America's got any choice but to deal with these people who have been highly corrupt for years.
And, of course, you know, a major part of this, in addition to the oil and the corruption going on, which Rubio said, we will continue that oil blockade until we get everything in line. And I'll have more on him here in just a second. But you have the other communist countries and the big adversaries of ours who have taken footholds in Venezuela, like Russia and China and Iran, which had a pretty big say over a lot there, I guess. But you also have, and it's funny, there was Jack Ryan, the book series, and then became a TV series like so many. There was a clip from that was going around the internet this weekend where Jack Ryan, the character, was teaching a collegiate class and was talking about, you know, what's the most dangerous country in the world? And a couple throw their hands up and they go, Russia. He goes, Russia? It's a pretty good guess. Somebody else, China? Okay, China, I hear you. Another person, North Korea? Yeah, okay. And then he goes, no, it's actually Venezuela, because Venezuela is so close to becoming a failed state. And we've seen other failed states like Yemen and Syria and go down the list of Middle Eastern countries. And he talked about the volatility of a failed state and the chaos that can result from that. He said, now, the difference in Cuba and a lot of the rest of these countries is that Cuba is well within nuclear range of the United States and can present a massive, massive problem to us. And then you had liberals online saying, oh, great, the president making his decisions based off of a Jack Ryan show. Like, they think he's that shallow or dense, but it was interesting to see that pop up. So, I mean, threefold, fourfold here maybe the reasons to go in and scoop up Maduro. And I know there's a lot of talk about the Dominion voting systems too. And I know many of you have delved further into that, but, what effect or reasoning was that there, and will they uncover information on all that? I don't know enough to speak intelligently on that, but as far as the oil is concerned, and my main worry is boots on the ground. I really don't want to see the U.S. military have to go into another war that we don't know how is going to end, and I don't think Trump wants that either. He seems to like these quick strike, get in, get out, you know, with the Soleimani drone strike.
Yeah, he's got a history of it.
The Iranian, strikes. So here's Rubio yesterday. He was asked by Stephanopoulos on ABC, how exactly are we going to control these oil fields? He said, will it take boots on the ground from American soldiers like Iraq? Here was what Rubio's answer was.
But how does the United States intend to secure the oil fields? Won't that take U.S. troops?
Well, ultimately, this is not about securing the oil fields. This is about ensuring that no sanctioned oil can come in and out until they make changes to the governance of that entire industry. Because right now, that industry is non-existent in the traditional way. These oil fields basically are pirate operations. People literally steal the oil from the ground. That's how they hold this regime together. A handful of cronies benefit from this oil, specific oil wells. They're producing at like 18% capacity because the equipment is all decrepit, and they basically pocket the money to their benefit. They sell the oil at a discount in global markets, you know, 40 cents on the dollar, 50 cents on the dollar, but all that money goes to them. Those oil fields have not benefited the people of Venezuela in over a decade, but they have made multimillionaires, billionaires, out of just a handful of people, and that's what's held this regime together. That's what needs to be addressed. The way to address it to the benefit of the Venezuelan people is to get private companies that are not from Iran or somewhere else to go in, invest in the equipment that hasn't been invested in 20 years, because none of the profits that have been made from the oil have been reinvested. It's all been stolen. And that's going to take outside companies that come in and know how to do that. That the people who do this stuff will know how to do it. But it all begins with dramatic changes at the way on the way that the authorities that are in charge of that industry behave. And until those changes happen, this quarantine will remain in place.
So there you go. And, you know, Trump, the master of never let him know your next move. Immediately after this, he starts talking about Colombia, Cuba, even Greenland back in the conversation here as we talk about control of the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah, it's you know, Cuba, Venezuela right there in our backyard. It had Trump's attention. It should have. Under Maduro, the economy shrunk by 80%. You talk about it being a failing state.
80%.
The oil production, one-fifth of what it was at its peak. One-fifth.
Mm.
But people are making big money on it.
Wow.
821, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Drew Pavianich with the Panini Senior Bowl will join us. General Manager, of course, Executive Director, I should say, of the Panini Senior Bowl. Join us a little at 3:30. It's 8:26 with Dan and Dalton.
Yeah, can I play this for you with all of the left, including Kamala Harris? Very upset about the actions with Maduro. And it's so funny, too, that Ma'am Donnie gets sworn in on New Year's Day and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders there to swear him in,
yeah,
which makes a whole heck of a lot of sense, right? But now you've got Maduro in that...
In his jail.
Jail. I don't know. Something about that hilarious to me. But it wasn't that long ago that many of the liberals, including Chuck Schumer, were saying that because Maduro is still in power in Venezuela, all that proves is that Trump is a puppet of Russia.
So that's,
remember those days?
Trump's first term. So this is 2016 to 2019? So
this speech 2020? From Schumer was actually from 2020. Okay. But yeah, during Trump's term there from 2016 to 2020. Just listen to Schumer and compare it to how upset he is now.
He brags about all these things he wants to do or is doing, but his actions belie his words. Maybe the best metaphor was his claim to bring democracy to Venezuela. There was a big policy there. It flopped. If the policy was working, Juan Guaido wouldn't be in the balcony here. He'd be in Venezuela. He'd be sitting in the president's palace. Or at least waging a fight to win. He's here. And the president brags about his Venezuela policy? Give us a break. He hasn't brought an end to the Maduro regime. The Maduro regime is more powerful today and more entrenched today than it was when the president began.
So now Schumer...
That was all like a tie to Russia, right? Like Trump's tied to Russia.
They were calling him Russia's, a puppet of Russia's.
Russia. So Maduro was a puppet of Russia, therefore Trump was a puppet of Russia.
Because he was letting him stay in power.
Yeah.
And now that... One of the smoothest, you know, operations we've seen takes Maduro out of Venezuela. Now Schumer and Kamala, and they all have a problem with it. To the text line we go. This texter, let's see here. I think what some of these hardline constitutionalists were looking for, were asking Congress for letters of mark and reprisal, like what was done with the Barbary Pirates, but he had already been given a warrant for his arrest by the court, so Congress didn't have a leg to stand on, I don't think. He says the network of Maduro has gradually been dismantled, and it's not to say that it was Maduro's network, but you look at the elections in Chile, Ecuador, Bolivia, the fall of Evo Morales, elections in Honduras, and the pressure that's being applied on Lula da Silva and on Panama. I think what we're seeing is a reset in terms of the Monroe Doctrine, or as you know, Trump called it the other day, the Donroe Doctrine. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the South American companies who were for this and against this, there are a lot more for it now than those against it. The communist countries of Colombia and
again,
Cuba.
coming out and saying it, you know, that they feel comfortable with saying, mm-hmm, this is a good thing.
Yeah, and we had Brazil, too. Not anymore, as you mentioned there. A lot of text, and we'll hopefully get to these before the end of the hour, too, but got a little football to talk about as well.
Drew Pavianich joins us on the way. 8:30 on Mobile Mornings, Dan and Dalton. FM Talk 106.5, and happy Monday.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
8:34 FM Talk 106.5 on this Monday. We'll talk with Drew Pavianich, Executive Director of the Panini Senior Bowl, here in just a second. But first, time to talk with Louie Arata at McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing just fine. And a new year and a great time to get out to McConnell. Plenty of vehicles on the lot. You're always stocked.
That's right. We've got a ton of new vehicles on this lot, and we're going to have some new rebates and new incentives coming out today, so I'll try to get those out Wednesday, and we'll get them on the website. But check the website out, McConnellAutomotive.com. We got plenty of, I mean, we had a great December, got a bunch of trades. We're going to have them GM certified. We'll have those all out front. A convertible Camaro we just traded in the other day. It's good looking and bright, right around here for Mardi Gras time, right around downtown in a convertible. But we're going to be out and about all day today and try to sell a few cars, and y'all come by and see us.
Yeah, and once those parades start, I know folks are going to be seeing some big old trucks that probably came from McConnell towing those floats. So a good chance to get a look at those, too. Louie, we appreciate it and hope your 2026 gets off to a great start.
Hey, thank y'all. Come see us.
All right, there you go. Louie Arata, McConnell Automotive. You'll find him on Dolphin Street just east of I-65 and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
A convertible weather, too. Going to be up around 68 degrees today into the 70s tomorrow. So, go ahead and
celebrate. Top down.
Yeah. Drew Fabianich is Executive Director of Panini's Senior Bowl. He joins us again for a weekly conversation. Good morning, Drew.
Morning, guys.
And we're hoping for some of this weather on January 31st when we all pack Hancock Whitney for the next big Senior Bowl and some great players that are on the way. And some great players this past week with the quarterfinals in the college football playoff. And I don't know where to start, so I'll start with a local boy who is coming to Mobile for the Senior Bowl. Texas Tech offense wasn't much to look at, but the defense sure was strong. And I thought that Lee Hunter was playing absolutely out of his mind from the nose tackle position.
Yeah, he was. He's just not that big old two gap nose tackle. He's got a little bit of, I always call him, he's got a little bit of sexy fat man to him.
He's got some wiggle.
Yeah, he's got some pass rush. He's got some hips. I mean, he moves well for his size. He really does. If that defense wouldn't have played the way they did in that first half, I mean, heck, I was watching that. It should have been like 28-0 at half.
Yeah, they'd have got rolled, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they played really well. But then, you turn the page on the other side. I mean, Oregon's defense played really, really well.
Mm-hmm. They sure did.
I agree.
What do you make of, and we'll get to Bama and all those teams too, but while we're talking Tech, David Bailey, and I know there's some big conversations about who the first edge to come off the board will be, and I thought I heard some folks saying Bailey, really good at rushing the passer, but maybe his run defense could use some work. He played a really good game as well. What do you make of him as we head towards the draft?
Well, and again, we've got a really, really good group of edge rushers coming, and this class is like loaded with edge guys and defensive ends. I like his edge rush ability. He does need a little bit of work, playing the run. But again, you get paid to rush the passer in the NFL. I mean, so that's the biggest thing, that leads me to believe that one of those rushers, put it this way, some of these guys that come down here may make their case for being the first pass rusher down here. Mm. I mean, we got them all here coming. I mean, all.
Mm. Hey, Drew, let me ask you real quick about, Texas Tech, they went out, they bought the roster. We get it. That's the way you can do it now. On the other hand, with Indiana, I don't know that they necessarily paid top dollar for that roster because a lot of those kids moved up. How is Segnetti, how does he do what he does? Has it got to do with evaluation? Have any of those guys in Indiana played their way to where they're now considered big-time pro prospects?
Surratt has. I mean, he's transferred two times before he was at Indiana.
Hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, he's played his way into the NFL and proved that he could be that. I always go back to this. Everybody says Texas Tech bought their roster. Well, so did Oregon.
Yeah.
So did Ohio State. I mean, there's talk about that just because Texas Tech has never done it before.
True.
And again, they did what everybody else is doing to compete. I mean, and put it this way, you think Texas spent more money on their roster than Texas Tech?
Yes. I think they did, yes.
Yeah. Cignetti's, the biggest success, part of, of just the way he's done things is he's set up, to where he brings people in that he thinks are the right mindset, for what he does. And, they have a standard now, and that comes from, years of, working with, Coach Saban and just working his way up. And, again, he went to a Division II school, then he went to, an FBS, and now then he jumped up. And guess what? He's right. He's won wherever he is because he's figured it out.
Mm.
And he's done a good job with the evaluation. But whoever is, whoever the young man is that's his, head of recruiting and scouting has done a good job too with the evaluation process because they haven't missed on a lot of guys. And the thing is, I'll bet you they spent probably close to the same amount as Texas Tech has. It's just they're not talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
Yeah. You know? It's hard to get past that scowl of Cignetti's to really get to the truth of the matter. But talking with the executive director of the Panini Senior Bowl, Drew Fabianich, and let's talk quarterbacks a little bit. And, even though I'm a Tennessee fan, I really hate to see players, especially college-aged players, see a dip in the excitement that the NFL and fans have for him. And Ty Simpson had quite the roller coaster of a year. I mean, at one point, people were looking at him as possibly a top five pick. And then as the season dragged on, and I think injuries started to affect him, he started to see that star fall a little bit and resulted in him even being benched in that loss to Indiana. What comes next for Simpson? I mean, is the best move for him? He has eligibility, right? Is the best move for him to come back to Bama or try to make it work before heading to the NFL? What do you make of his kind of body of work right now?
Well, I mean, his body of work was really good, like you said, until everybody figured out that they couldn't run the ball at all. And they started teeing up on him, and he took a lot of shots. And he wasn't benched. He was injured in that game. I mean, there's no reason why they would have taken him out other than that reason alone. excuse me. quarterbacks are going to go high when teams are in need for quarterbacks. And I could still see him, I mean, off the tape and what he's done. I mean, because, again, they're going to look at the whys. Why was there a dip? Well, the reason why there was a dip is because they had to throw the ball every damn down. Mm-hmm. That's why. And everybody knew it. So that's why the dip. And then, you know, again, you get beat up when you take a lot of shots, and he took a lot of shots. I wouldn't be surprised if he's still a top 10 pick. Mm-hmm. I really wouldn't. And, again, could he stay? Yeah, he could stay. And could he make, you know, as much as some of these, quote, transfer portal guys are making? Yeah, he could. But that's 1 year away from, you know, getting your second contract in the NFL. And, you know, how much did he really lose? And that's something that his agent and, you know, his family and him have to discuss and decide whether they want to stick out one more year and have one less year in the NFL and one less year closer to being, you know, getting into your second contract. Because if you get your second contract as quarterback, it's not just good money. It's generational money.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I'm just going to plead ignorance on all this. I'm a college football fan and have been for years. I really don't even want to get into the sausage making of the contracts with the players and all that. I never got into it back when the money was being given under the table. Now that it's even legit, I kind of don't really want to know. I just want to root.
Does it soil the game for you a little bit?
A little bit. It does. It does. Trinidad Chambliss, what do you make of the performance he had against Georgia? That was incredible.
Yeah, incredible performance, because that's a very good Georgia defense. They are. They played well, you know, from middle of the season on. They played really, really well. And, you know, he's got the right traits to run that type of offense. I mean, he's a little bit short in stature, so he's got to, you know, they got to move the pocket on him. He's not a drop-back guy. You know, he's got RPOs that he can run. I mean, because he's a dual-threat quarterback. And, you know, when you're a defensive coordinator, you hate having to defend all 11. And that's what you have to do with him. You know, he's quite capable, you know, of throwing it. And again, he picks apart defenses just as well as some of the other guys do. He's just smaller.
Mm. Is he a pro prospect? Can he play in the pros?
I mean, you'd have to do some of the things they did for Kyler Murray. You'd have to back the pocket up a little bit for him to see. He'd have to use his legs, you know, and again, because it's really, really hard to sit in that pocket at that size and be able to see where you're throwing. Now, you have to trust that your receivers are going to be there, but when you're playing Q, it's more comforting to be able to see your lanes and see where you're throwing.
Sure.
You know, so they're going to have to, like, put it this way, you can't do an old cookie cutter, you know, Ernie Zampezi, you know, five-step, seven-step, play action, you know, game. You can't do that. So you've got to use some of the college concepts, you know, in the league to let him be successful. But, I mean, somebody may do that. I mean, he's got another year, and I mean, I don't know. Well, I'm sorry. He's probably going to get another year because the NCAA is not going to fight anybody anymore on anything. Yeah. They're just not.
Yeah, that's what he's after, right.
Yeah, and we see with college basketball, you might even be able to be drafted into the NFL and then come back and play a year. But that's a conversation for another time. You mentioned how stacked the edge class is, and as a fan of a team that's picking top five in the NFL draft, I know we're looking at edge and we're looking at receiver. I know next year's receiver class is supposed to be generational, especially with Jeremiah Smith and hopefully Ryan Williams has a bounce back. But what do you make of the guys this year at wideout? It seems that the first two names off the board on most of the mocks are Jordan Tyson over there in Arizona State, and then a guy who's actually a number two on his team, Carnell Tate with Ohio State. What do you make of this wide receiver class?
Well, and like you said, there's two guys right there. There may be a third that are number ones. And I'm not talking first round. I mean just number one receivers. Mm. But this class has got a lot of number twos and a lot of number threes. It's pretty deep. Like you said, though, are there some real premier guys? No. Those two that you talked about are solid. And there's probably one more that could be a number one. But if you're looking to maybe take one or two, you know, it's a good class because it's very deep in number.
Drew Fabianich is the executive director of the Panini's Senior Bowl, and that thing's going to get here before you know it. I guess you got more announcements coming soon, Drew, about players coming this way.
Yeah, you'll get a big quarterback today be announced. We'll wait. You just have to wait for the post. follow the Senior Bowl. Follow me. You'll find out. And then it'll be on the website, which all of the accepted invites are on the website. Plus, you can go on the website and get your tickets because they are selling really quickly. And I wouldn't wait around till, you know, a week out. I'd get them now if I were you.
Yeah, and we talk about, you know, not just the game and how excited we are about that. And I get fired up for the week of practices. But you guys have a lot more going on beyond that. Some good family stuff, too. And I'm super pumped about the block party and one of my favorite bands, if not my favorite band, Muscadine Bloodline, kind of ringing in Senior Bowl week. So you guys have a lot coming up at the end of this month.
Yeah, we do. And like you said, it, you know, just that the Mardi Gras, you know, parade for the players on that Friday night, followed by the free concert at Mardi Gras Park, and, you know, and then the ball game. And then again, I'm looking forward to the ball game, too, because it's going to be my first, too. So, yeah, can't wait for that one.
Congratulations, Drew. Seems like it's been a very successful first campaign for you.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I'd like to say this is a really, really solid roster, and I think it is, and I think the NFL will be real thrilled with it, and I think it'll make some of these players a heck of a lot of money because, you know, they always say, you know, line up against the best of the best, yep. And that's what this is. And when you prove that you can do that, you know, the NFL takes account of what you're lining up against.
Well, until the Senior Bowl, which is the last college game of the year, we've got three more big ones before then. So next week we'll talk about these semifinals once they've come and gone at the end of this week and then the national championship. So looking forward to talking with you again a week from now, Drew.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
You got it. Drew Fabianich is the executive director of the Panini's Senior Bowl. He's expecting a sellout. That's good news, but it's not good news if you don't get your tickets.
Could you tell I was kind of digging in and seeing if he could give me some hints on who the Titans should draft?
Yeah,
at four overall.
I thought it was kind of funny when you said we could use an edge rusher. I'm like, you need everything. You know, let's start at snapper. It's 8:49.
Or coach.
Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings.
News, weather, traffic, and sports. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
Yeah, I hope everyone had a safe and happy new year. Now back at it. Hopefully get some of these texts and calls about the actions in Venezuela over the weekend. First, let me tell you about Underdog Fantasy with the college football playoffs still rolling this week and the NFL playoffs starting the wild card round this coming weekend. Underdog is the best place to get in on all of the gridiron action, and you can make entries and win money right now in Alabama. And I had this app open a lot over these last couple of weeks with all the games going on, plus with college basketball conference play underway now. It's really fun as well. Playing on Underdog is easy. Just choose if your favorite players will go higher or lower on stats like touchdowns, rushing yards, receptions, and more. And you can mix and match players from not just different teams but different sports. So say you like a player in college basketball but also the wild card round, you can put them together. And the more players you add to your entries, if you win, the more money you could pick up. Get them right. You could win up to 5,000 times your cash. So what you waiting for? Download the Underdog app today and use promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, and score $75 in bonus entries when you play your first $5. That's promo code Dalton. Underdog. Make plays, win money. Must be 19 plus and present in Alabama. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/play and get terms_DFS_.html for details. And if you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncbgambling.org.
On the text line, Randy says, how come the liberal media and the liberal progressives do not talk about about how it's a good thing that a proven and known human rights violator, Maduro, has been removed from power. Oil aside and narco trafficking aside, wasn't Maduro just stomping on innocent people? People who opposed him in any way or opposed that whole regime were just getting, you know.
They were right back to the food lines.
See you later.
The same morning that he was taken out of there. Dire situation in Venezuela.
Dire situation in Venezuela, and maybe some of the celebration is being suppressed right now. I don't know. I think that if you were the Trump administration, you might would say, okay, we're going to start playing ball now, including let the people celebrate.
Yeah, and it's a tough needle to thread, too, running as a non-interventionist, and really it's a non-Middle Eastern interventionist, at least as far as boots on the ground for an extended period of time. These quick strikes, quick successful strikes that Trump has been able to, I want to say get away with, but that sounds like it's cheapening the actions of the military. I mean, from all the way back at the drone strike on Soleimani, you look at the Iranian missile attacks on their nuclear reactors.
That was amazing.
And then you get to this where we didn't lose a single life, didn't lose a single piece of equipment as far as I can tell. I know we had a chopper that took a shot but was able to get back to base. And Randy, your point is, I mean, I think it's so obvious the hypocrisy. We played that audio.
Played the Schumer, right there was.
Yeah.
And speaking of regime change, we could see that could really be, this could be the age of regime change. And
well, we've said that before. we've maybe not said it out loud, but we've hoped it before.
So, okay, I'm just saying, Iran,
it's teetering right now, isn't it?
It feels like it is, and the leader's got to be 85 to 89, somewhere in there. There's a lot of candles on his cake. And so we understand with the religious leader and all of that, and you have the highly educated population. It's got to be tired of just finishing last and in the midst of all the – and getting their nuclear reactors, you know, bombed. And then they must be like, man, we're over all this.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as Cuba is concerned, he was asked about that last night, Trump was, and he basically said, I don't think I need to do anything to Cuba. I think it's going to fail on its own. But how weird, how crazy would that be if Cuba became easier to deal with us? If they became, you know, imagine if the...
If Cuba reached out to us for help.
Imagine if in a few years the Carnival Cruise Line picks you up in Mobile and takes you down to Havana.
Yeah, well, their car lots need more than 1956 Impalas, so it's time for an upgrade a little bit.
Well, I hope they keep some of that retro coolness. I know they don't enjoy it, but I like looking at their cars.
Maybe they do enjoy it, but that's ingenious that they keep those things rocking and rolling on the roads.
Once they figure out that America won't let you work on your own car, they might not want us to come in there.
But once they hear Cuba. That Tesla is not going to allow FM radio in the car.
They might have some issues.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll Doctor says the only boots on the ground we need in Venezuela is from Halliburton and Chevron. Chris in Orange Beach says the senator yesterday on Face the Nation, who is the Maryland dad's biggest cheerleader. Is he the one who went down and had a margarita down there?
Yeah.
Said, making this statement verbatim, we have so many Americans who are locked up down there that must be freed and brought home. He said, and of course he's talking about illegal aliens. Now, I saw that since this pressure ramped up, they had 5 Americans in captivity. I don't know the specifics, though, whether, you know, but still, successful. Successful intervention from Trump there to this point. Jeff Poor Show on the way. Jennifer Fidler joins him in hour number one. Can't wait to hear from former DHS agent Angelo Fermo on this whole thing in hour number two. And former congressman running for AL1 again, Jerry Carl, joins Jeff in hour number three. And we'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 on Mobile Mornings.